Hello and welcome to WGTC Radio, the official podcast of entertainment website We Got This Covered. I'm Jonathan Lack.
And I am Sean Chapman.
And Sean, do you want to tell us about the opening music or drum beat or whatever it was we just played?
Yes, the opening, like, you know, beat of music, just the bum bum ba dum ba bum bum. That comes from a game on the PSN that I bought over this weekend and have been playing called Tokyo Jungle. Very strange and very, very entertaining game.
We will talk about that. We will talk about another PSN game, some other PlayStation-related stuff in today's episode. This is really going to be just a sort of grab-bag-style episode.
Yeah, I think shooting the shit.
Yeah, we thought about some certain topics, and I think we're going to make this sort of just a short, like, catching-up episode because nothing is happening in the world of entertainment really right now. There's really not any, like, topical topics to talk about.
And
we'll have some more in the weeks to come. I think next week we were thinking, either next week or the week after, Batman The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 comes out on DVD and Blu-ray, and we may get both parts together, watch those, talk about them, because we love Batman, we love The Dark Knight Returns, and we have not yet reviewed that DC Animated Universe movie yet.
Yeah.
And we were waiting specifically for both parts to be out, because, you know, why review one half of it?
Yeah, and... You know, DC puts out all of those animated movies, and they never get a lot of attention. And so I think it'd be nice to, like... do an episode on that and, like, kind of shine a bit of a light on it, because those movies are fantastic most of the time.
So. Yeah. And even when they're not, it's the effort that they put into it and the fact that this exists and money is being put into it is cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll talk about that next week. But this week we're just going to talk about some random stuff that's on our mind. Hope it's entertaining. This will be sort of like a prolonged version of one of our normal introductory segments where we just talk about, you know, what we've been doing.
Yeah.
Because we do have a surprising amount of PlayStation stuff to talk about. Because I brought my PlayStation up to the apartment. And my PlayStation 3 specifically. Not my, like, old PlayStation. I don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
But I have never really used the PlayStation 3 for gaming, but I think I'm going to get into that a little bit more because I want to catch up on some stuff before this console generation ends. I think Sean's kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, because I never bought a PlayStation 3 because, man, those things cost a lot of money. And I've kind of focused on PC and Xbox gaming. But now that I have, like, an opportunity to do that, I'm definitely looking forward at sort of filling out that backlog of gaming, that all those really great PlayStation exclusives I've not been able to play.
Yeah, same here. And yeah, it's interesting. And I also, I want to tell a story, because I bought a cool piece of PlayStation equipment this week. It's, I got these headphones. They're the PlayStation 3 Pulse Elite Edition wireless headphones. And they're sort of the official wireless headset for the PlayStation 3. They're really cool. Normally, I would not buy a headset specifically for the PlayStation 3 because I don't really game on it.
Yeah.
But I do use, I do watch all my DVDs and Blu-rays through it, and we don't have a 5.1 sound system set up here. And these headphones do virtual 7.1 surround sound, which is really cool, and that sounds really good. And it's not obviously as good as having a real 7.1 setup, but sometimes when I need to review a Blu-ray or just want to watch one and get the actual 5.1 mix, it would be nice to have something like that. And these are pretty affordable for nice wireless headphones. They sound great. I read a lot of reviews. They're pretty cool. You can hook them up, actually, to anywhere you can get basically a wireless reception through the USB dongle that comes with it. So you can, like, you can use it with your Xbox through the TV sound, use it on your Mac, all these, or PC. So they're kind of cool. They're not, like, most headsets, like all the wireless Xbox 360 headsets you can only use with your Xbox.
Yeah.
These PlayStation 3 ones, they work best with your PlayStation 3 because that's where the 7.1 works. You can use them as a headset. They don't actually have a microphone that sticks out. The microphone's hidden, which is really nice. You don't look like an idiot while you're wearing it. It's just, you know, they're headphones. You can talk
through. Yeah, it's not like this flimsy, plastic, like, helicopter pilot type of thing that makes you just look like a complete loser.
No, it doesn't have that, and it works really well for that. That function obviously doesn't work on the Xbox side of things, but it does work on your Mac. It works on your iPhone. So they're a really cool headset, but... I'm not really here to review them. I think they're neat, and maybe I'll say another couple things later because I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect with them, and I just have some stories about that. But I have a story about buying these headphones.
Yes, you do.
So, I am a member of Best Buy's Reward Zone Club. That's like their, you know, they're just like little rewards membership thing.
Yeah.
You get it for free normally. And then I signed up about a year ago because I got it for free as part of a promotion. Their Gamer Zone Rewards Club.
Gamer Zone.
Yeah, which is really just a fancy way of them saying you get discounts on pre-owned games and some special perks here and there. So it's like I got it for free, so it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gamer Zone thing, part of the promotion is that every month you get Best Buy's Gamer Magazine. Now, that magazine is a piece of shit.
I can imagine.
A, it's a magazine, so who fucking cares? B, it's... And I'm not saying I don't like reading or what magazines do or anything. It's that it's the internet era. We don't need them anymore.
Yeah, we've got, you know, a million magazines at our fingertips at any given moment, effectively,
yes. The internet. I mean, everyone was sad last year when Newsweek went under. Well, Newsweek could have gone online.
Yeah. I think we all know that sort of print model is basically dead now.
Yeah.
Other than apparently for Best Buy.
Yeah. So they've got this magazine that comes every month. It's pretty shitty. But you get a page of coupons in there, and sometimes the coupons are good. Like, you can get, I think this month's one of them was like, you can buy Soul Calibur 5 for $10. Well, if you like Soul Calibur, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Or other things like that. Just little, you know, like, sometimes there's sizable discounts because only a small portion of their, you know, audience is getting those. It's the GamerZone members, so.
GamerZone.
It encourages you to purchase these objects at Best Buy. And they have pieces of tech in there, too. And they had a coupon this month. I got it, you know, early January. And the coupon was for these very headphones, the Pulse Elite Edition wireless headset. And I never heard of this before, but I looked at them and I'm like, oh, they're 7.1 wireless. That could come in handy. I need those for my PS3 for movie watching. And if they work with something else, that'd be neat. So I did some research, found out they did virtually everything I wanted them to do. And with this coupon, they would only cost like $100. I'm like, that's pretty good for a nice wireless headset.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah. That seems too good to be true, doesn't it?
It does seem too good to be true. Good thing that it is true, right, Jonathan?
It's not true.
Oh.
I went to Best Buy on January 12th to buy these headphones. I found them, and I'm like, oh, cool, here they are. Just, you know, grab them in the PlayStation 3 section. They had a bunch of them out. Clearly, they were getting ready for this promotion. They say $129.99, and I'm like, awesome. So I'll just take $30 off that, and it's $100. That's a really good deal. I bring it up to the counter, and I start to buy them, and the guy scans the coupon. Coupon doesn't go through. Scans it again, does not go through. And it won't go through, and he's like, I wonder what the problem is. And he takes a closer look and he says, oh, sir, this coupon does not start until tomorrow, January 13th. First off, Sean, have you ever heard of something like that?
No, I've never seen, you know, I've had coupons expire. I haven't had a coupon so early that it hasn't started working yet. Like, that concept seems fucked up to me, that you could even get a coupon that isn't valid yet.
Especially because I had gotten this coupon a week before in that Gamer magazine, and that Gamer magazine had, I would assume, have gone out to other people even earlier than it did to me.
Yeah.
So for some reason, they don't start this, like, coupon promotion until a set date, so that's just weird.
Yeah.
But I think nothing of it. The next day, January 13th, I come back. And I'll just come back and buy them, or try to buy them again, I guess. So I go, I grab them off the shelf again. I'm just in a hurry, so I don't look at anything. I just grab the set, bring it up to the counter again, and they ring it up. And now it rings up as $159.99, not $129.99. And the guy sees my coupon and he says, oh, you want me to put that coupon on? And I'm like, wait, why does that say $160? And he says, well, because they're $160. And I'm like, yesterday they were $130. He's like, yeah, today's Sunday, so we raised the price. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to buy these. And he's like, why? I'm like, I'm not saving a cent with this coupon. And he's like, I don't, I'm like, I'm leaving. And I walked out. What the fuck?
Yeah, no, that's pretty fucked up that they would give you a coupon for $30 off that is not valid until the point where they raise the price by $30, thereby making the coupon completely fucking pointless.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fucked up business practice right there.
It is. And it's like, at this point, I mean, one side of their advertising had clearly worked, because I now wanted these headphones. I just didn't want them from Best Buy anymore.
Yeah, because fuck those guys.
Yeah, fuck those guys. So I went home, I got on Amazon, and I'm like, okay, they have these for like $115. That's about what it would have been with the tax added on anyway. So I'll just buy them from Amazon and know that I'm buying from someone I trust and do not feel morally repelled by.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
That's shitty.
That's pretty shitty.
So, fuck you, Best Buy. That's just weird.
And fuck you, coupons.
Yeah, fuck you, coupons. I think I'm going to just trash that Gamer magazine from now on when I get it, because it is trash.
And that's kind of like the shittiest part out of all of it, is that the way you got this coupon is by being a member of their, like, special friend club.
Yeah, I was loyal to their business.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, all the people who got that coupon are signed up for their Gamer Zone. And do you think those people are the people they should treat, you know, most respectfully and give them the best deals? Instead, fucking them in the ass by giving them completely worthless coupons.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I wouldn't mind if they'd never said that. If they just advertised the coupon in the paper, in the magazine and I read about it, I would still probably have bought them for Best Buy. It's just the whole, like, we're not giving you any, like, it's just we're enticing you with a discount.
We're pretending that we're going to give you a discount, but we're really not. We're doing it in a really obvious way.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Anyway, I did get the headphones in last week from Amazon, because Amazon is awesome. Let's plug Amazon for a second. Like, fast shipping, you can return anything, like, 6 months after you buy it. It's great. And you don't have to interact with human beings.
That is the best part. You don't have to put your pants on.
No.
Amazon.com.
Go pantsless.
Yeah, that should be their slogan.
Anyway, I got these Elite headphones in. They're really, really good. I would highly recommend them, especially if you're a PS3 gamer. I'd say they're a must-own because they just work so flawlessly. You put the USB dongle in, and you turn on your headphones, and it's all, like, the interface is up there on the PS3 display. They're really easy to use. They've got the 7.1 surround sound, which is really, really good. It's some of the best surround sound emulation through headphones I've ever heard. And even through just stereo, like when you're on your Mac or your Xbox, it emulates, like, placement of sound really well. Like, when I play Mass Effect, it's through my Xbox, and so it's only, the headphones are only transmitting stereo, but I can still hear when, you know, one of the characters is behind me or in front of me. So directionality is pretty good on these things. But anyway, the cool, like, hook of these headphones is that they have this new, what PlayStation calls bass impact technology. What it basically is it's sort of like a mix of a subwoofer and a rumble pack in your headphones. So basically it takes bass signals and turns them into rumble, but for your headphones, and it is awesome. It's stupid, but it's awesome. Sort of like rumble in a controller.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you don't necessarily need it, but if you don't have it, like if you go away from it, you realize you miss it.
Yeah, no. It kind of sounds like that D-Box thing at movie theaters where you sit totally in a special
like
chair.
Yeah.
It's totally shakes you.
Yeah, it's totally like that. So, like, I'm playing Mass Effect, and let's say I'm behind cover, and a Biotic throws, like, a really big Biotic impact, and it hits my, you know, the cover.
Yeah, your concrete block.
Yeah. And basically, if you're playing, you know, Mass Effect with a normal 5.1 setup, your subwoofer will just shake. On these headphones, your head shakes, and you feel like you would be in that scenario. There would be that impact. You really are, like, just in the game or in the movie. I watched some of Raiders of the Lost Ark through my PlayStation 3 to test out the 7.1 and the bass impact. Sounds really cool. When Indy, like, you know, throws someone under a car, your head shakes. It's neat. And they've got presets so you can, like, they've got presets for, like, movies, you know, music, shooters, fighter games, racing games.
So you can, like, adjust how much it shakes for whatever.
Well, not only that, do they have the presets, they have a whole dial that you can adjust the amount of the shaking and, like, the intensity of
it. Okay, that's good, because it seems like that could get kind of annoying in some things.
Well, for instance, I was playing Mass Effect 2 today and Lair of the Shadow Broker, and when you get to the Shadow Broker's compound in the sky, there's, like, a bunch of wind and, like...
Yeah, because it's in, like, it's in the planet's atmosphere. Yeah.
So your head is just constantly shaking. And I'm like, I just turned it down. I didn't turn it down much because I actually wanted that effect. That's why I put the headphones on while I was playing that section, because I kind of wanted to be in it.
Yeah.
But the full was, like, hurting my head. But no, you have total control. They've got volume control on them and stuff. But anyway, I'm not really trying to plug the headphones. It's just a cool tech purchase I made, and I wanted to endorse it. But mostly I just wanted to say, fuck you, Best Buy.
Yeah. You know what I want to do with those headphones? I want to watch the Transformers animated movie, and every time Optimus Prime talks, your head just, like, shakes.
Oh, God, I have to do that.
That'd be...
My DVD isn't up here. Shit. Oh,
we'll have to bring it up.
It. Yeah.
Because that would be fucking awesome.
It would be. All right, Sean, you've been doing some PlayStation stuff.
Yeah.
I believe you bought two games. What were they?
Well, I bought Tokyo Jungle and Journey, but before I talk about that, I want to just, like, talk about the PS3 in general, because this is like, I've used the PS3 before because I have a bunch of friends who have it, and I've, you know, been over to their houses and played games on it and stuff, but not that much, and this is my first real use of any of its, like, system level stuff, like its user interface and stuff like that, and it was an interesting experience, just like getting used to a new system that I've not really used a lot.
I was going to say, Sean, you basically had the epitome of PS3 user experiences when you went to sign up for your account.
It reminded me of, like playing MMOs back in the day, because I have never, since I use Xbox Live, you know, you pay for it. I don't think, I hope the next version of Xbox Live is not a paid service. It shouldn't be a paid service. At the very least with Xbox Live, it's only been down once I can remember, and that is when the new Xbox Experience came out. That Christmas, so many people bought Xboxes that Xbox Live was not down, but really slow for like a day or two.
Yeah.
What happened with the PS3 was, when I was buying these games and planning on actually sitting down and playing the PS3, like creating an account and all that stuff, because I hadn't done any of that shit yet, was on Friday night. And Friday night, I decided I'm going to go do this. And when I did that, I quickly discovered that I could not do that. As soon as I went to create an account and I went to the PlayStation Network to say, it's like, I want to, you know, make a PlayStation Network ID, it was like, I am sorry, you cannot do that. A network server error has occurred. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. Let's try it again. No, it's still not working. That's kind of weird. Turn off the PS3. Maybe it's that. Turn it back on. Yeah, no, that's still not working. Okay, well, what the fuck? So I got on my laptop, went to PlayStation.com, and lo and behold, there's a message that says that there is an extended server maintenance ongoing for the PlayStation Network from Thursday at 8 in the morning, which had been yesterday at this point, to Friday, and it said it was going to end at Friday at, like, 8 o'clock p.m. I was starting this at, like, 4, so I was like, that's kind of shitty, and I just was like, that's really weird. But, like, I didn't think that you would have to have this maintenance, it's like, period, for an online service that would make it go completely down when this service has been up for like 6 or 7 years now. You know, this isn't World of Warcraft, where when you play an MMO, you know, the server will go down for a couple of hours every few days or so for server maintenance. That's like, I kind of accepted that. I thought that was really fucking weird with the PlayStation, so I was like, whatever, okay,
well,
I will accept this.
And Sean, if I had been here, I would have told you about this, because I went Thursday night because I wanted to research some prices for different games I wanted to buy on the PlayStation Store, and you can't, unlike Xbox Live, there's no online version of the PlayStation Store yet, so you have to do it from the PlayStation. In any case, I went to do that, wouldn't let me sign in, I thought my password was wrong, did the same thing as you, got my computer out, looked it up, and I'm like, oh, server maintenance, it was supposed to end, though, that night, Thursday night.
Yeah, it was supposed to end by Thursday, I later discovered.
So I actually just turned on the Xbox, started playing Mass Effect, and then came back to it, still wasn't on, something was weird, and then I guess, then, like, 24 hours later, you had the same experience.
Yeah, so originally it was started at Thursday at 8 a.m., and it was supposed to end, I think, by 8 p.m. of that Thursday.
Yeah.
Then it got pushed back to Friday morning, and then it got pushed back to Friday night, and so there I am sitting, waiting for 8 p.m. to come around. I'm like, well, there's nothing really to do, and I was kind of excited to play some PS3 games, so I saw that you had Infamous loaded up, like, downloaded on there from when PlayStation Network went famously down already, like, a couple of years ago.
For months.
Yeah, because their servers got hacked, and so they gave a bunch of people free games, and you got Little Big Planet and Infamous. So I loaded up Infamous. I was luckily able to play it, even though I wasn't able to get onto the PlayStation Network. So that's a plus, you know.
Yeah.
It seems like some of their DRM stuff is not really super strict. Like, I don't think I would have been able to do that on the Xbox.
No, they're actually really good about that. I like that. If your DLC is there, or any downloaded content is on your PS3, anyone on that PS3 can play it, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, no, because with Xbox, you can do that with arcade games, but you can't do that with games-on-demand games.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks. But anyway, so then I loaded up Infamous. I played that for a little bit, but couldn't really get into it because the weird thing with Infamous is that it's a game that I found out was made in 2009. That game feels like it was made in, like, 2006. I had this really weird feeling when I was playing that game. It's like, this is a really old game. Like, all the facial models are really poorly animated. They've got kind of like the Halo 1, like, one, like, muscle in your jaw, and that's how you talk kind of thing going on.
I guess I have that Infamous game. I have Little Big Planet. I've never even opened either of them.
Yeah, I had to install the files from Infamous. Like, they weren't installed. It was downloaded
for years.
Yeah. But that was kind of a weird... That's another weird thing with the PlayStation that I didn't know, is that it's kind of like a computer where you download the file and then you have to install it.
Yeah.
You have to, like, run that executable.
You sometimes have to install your games you buy on disc.
Yeah, that's what I kind of had heard about that, but I didn't realize that the whole download process was like that, too. And that's another really weird thing about what the PlayStation 3 does, and I think it's partially because of our TV also, but our TV... The way our TV works, that, like, whenever you, like, switch a signal or whatever, you know, it has, like, that blue screen that's, like, really bright blue and has, like, no signal on it. And that's, like, when it's not receiving a signal through the HDMI cable, it will say that. This really weird thing that PlayStation 3 does is that whenever you load up a new game, it, like, basically whenever you load up a new executable, it cuts the video feed, so like our TV will display no signal for a couple of seconds, and it'll cut back into the game. That's really fucking weird.
I know, it's weird, and I've just been used to it because that's when I watch a Blu-ray, it always has to do that, because I think what it's doing is it's adjusting the frame rate it's putting out, things like that. It's getting ready to, you know, show your content. But yeah, other things don't just
cut to black. Yeah, but I've never seen anything else. It doesn't cut to black. Like, it cuts the video feed. Like, right. It doesn't send any information. Yeah. It's not like it sends, just display black for a little bit. But anyways, that's not important. Back to Infamous. So, like, my quick review of, the 1 hour of Infamous I played. It's a superhero game where you are a dude named Cole, and you somehow get lightning powers, and you're in the city, and the city gets shut down, and you kill people with lightning powers. Or you don't kill them because it's got, a really black-and-white morality type of thing. But it really feels like they want you to be bad because, one, the game's called fucking Infamous.
Yeah.
And that's, the top ranking on their, morality system for, the bad side is called Infamous. So I think they want you to be really bad. And then Cole's voice actor, his voice is, really low and growly, and it sounds like, yeah, this is a dude who probably kills fucking people and doesn't go around handing candy out to children. That's really weird. And then the other weird thing about the game is that the camera is pulled really far back all the fucking time, so I feel like I have no connection to any of the characters. It's just it's just a game that I had to, I just had this really weird feeling while I was playing it that's a really old game when it's not that old. I'm sure it's a really good game, too. You know, a lot of people really like it,
but
and I only played a little bit of it.
But here's the thing about Infamous, and I actually remember this. And I actually remember this from the time of the PSN outage and when I had to go through all that, is that Infamous 2 is the one that people really love. That one,
is it?
Yeah, as far as I know, because that's the one that came out around the same time as the PSN outage. And I think it got really good reviews. And what I remember is it's sort of the typical video game sequel where people thought, well, the first one had a good foundation, this one improved upon it. And I think a lot of people were saying at the time that PlayStation and Sony did just a really shitty job of repaying the people who had their service out for months and months and months, because the only games they offered, the free ones, were games that you could buy for $5 at any GameStop. So Little Big Planet had been out for years, and it was already in
the game. Also, it's Little Big Planet just seems like one of those games that the vast majority of PS3 owners already had.
Exactly,
right?
And Infamous was one people already had, especially because everyone was getting Infamous 2, and so it was just and then what a lot of people were, and Little Big Planet 2 was about to come out, so what everyone was saying is, they're basically using this to promote the sequels for these games that have either just come out or are coming out.
You know, Sony had to do something after their servers got hacked and their service was down for a couple of months.
Yeah.
That was fucking crazy.
That was nuts.
I mean, I had to deal with extended server maintenance for... Again, did I even get to this part of the story where that come 8 p.m. on Friday night, I had waited 3 hours to start playing games. I'd been playing Infamous for a little bit. I loaded up, you have Final Fantasy downloaded, or Final Fantasy VII downloaded. I loaded that up for a second, and I very quickly realized, holy crap, I forgot that Final Fantasy VII is a fucking PlayStation 1 game.
Oh, yeah.
And oh my god, does it look like a PlayStation 1 game.
It's not just a PlayStation 1 game, it's a pre-analog stick PlayStation 1 game.
Yeah, it's an old PlayStation, old for PlayStation 1, PlayStation 1 games. And I never finished Final Fantasy VII, but I played it a bunch. I played a bunch of the old those Final Fantasy games at my friends' houses. They have those PlayStation consoles, and that's kind of how I would play those games with them. And I can't even look at Final Fantasy VII anymore. The art design, I want to say, is still good, but the graphics are so bad. It's in that, really awkward, we are moving into 3D period. Everything is jagged and pixelated and bad looking.
I agree to a certain extent. I still think I kind of enjoy the look of it to a certain extent because I think it's an interesting compromise between 2D and 3D. But I agree. I don't know why there has not been an HD remake of that yet, because that is a fantastic game, and I would, no matter what system they put it on, I would buy an HD remake of Final Fantasy VII.
I have the answer to that. This is after I did that to kill some fucking time waiting for the PSN to come up. After my eyes started bleeding after going into the first battle sequence in Final Fantasy VII, I was like, didn't they release a PC version of this, a new PC version of this pretty recently? And I looked up and Square Enix is selling it on their website for $15, and you can get a really nice mod that people have made that up-res the textures. And actually, I think they basically remade most of the textures because they're so awful in the original game. So if you're looking for a not horrendously awful-looking Final Fantasy VII experience, look to the PC version and download some mods.
I'm just saying,
Yeah, Square Enix should fucking do, like, get on the ball
because,
and do that. Because that's
because
the one
they
that
would
most
make,
people love.
They would make vaults of money.
Yeah.
Every single employee at Square Enix could have their own Scrooge McDuck vault. I mean, it would be... Can you imagine that if they announced tomorrow, like, all right, PS3 is getting a Final Fantasy VII HD remake. They could charge $100 for it. It would still sell like hotcakes.
And actually, like, Square Enix is doing something really weird where it feels like they should be doing the Final Fantasy VII, like, HD, like, look at this version right now. But it's, like, all, like, the word coming down has been for a while that they're, if they haven't started it yet, they're looking into doing an HD, remastering of Final Fantasy X.
They are. It's for the Vita. It's coming
out. It's, like, that seems way too soon. Like, they should do Final Fantasy VII now, because that's still the most popular one. That's the one that a lot of people still remember really fondly. And come, like, 5 years from now, Final Fantasy X will be that game, because that will be, the first Final Fantasy that those people played, even though it's got Tidus, and I fucking hate Tidus, so fuck Final Fantasy X. But, you know, there's a lot of people who have a lot of nostalgia around that game, and that number of people who have nostalgia around Final Fantasy X will double in, like, 5 years, and they would be in a position to buy an HD remastering.
It's like, I completely agree.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, and I like the idea of Final Fantasy HD games for the Vita. That's cool.
Yeah.
I just... Start earlier, like
start with Final Fantasy VII. You know, it's not like Final Fantasy VII for them is like this sacred game that they never go back and touch. You know, they made like cell phone games. They made like that Dirge of Cerberus piece of shit for the PS2. They made the animated movie, whatever the fuck it's called,
Advent Children.
Yeah, like the fan fiction that they made for it, and all like you know whatever the really shitty version of One Winged Angel that's in that. That's the only version you can find on YouTube. But that's fuck it. We've been talking about Final Fantasy VII.
We are so off topic.
Too much.
But anyway, when did PSN finally come back?
So I was doing everything that I said right now on this podcast was going through my head, just like killing time, waiting for 8 p.m. on Friday to come around. Come fucking 8 p.m. on Friday, lo and behold, extended schedule maintenance moves to fucking Saturday at 2 in the morning. And so I'm like, well, fuck. I just wasted, like, 3 hours of my life playing one game that's probably actually okay, but I didn't really get into and didn't want to get into right now, and then also playing a game that's super fucking old and I cannot look at anymore, and then just, like, complaining about Final Fantasy to myself as I do every time I think of Final Fantasy for 3 fucking hours, and then they push it back to 2 in the morning, and I think, like, all of this shit was for, like, integrating PayPal into their store. Because that's what's happened, is that after the maintenance went down, you can use your PayPal account in their store. It's like...
You can only use it in their store online, and since you can't buy things online, it means you can only use PayPal to add funds to your wallet online. You can still not use PayPal to add funds to your wallet on the PlayStation 3.
Well, fuck. I didn't even know that. I only saw the headline of PayPal on PlayStation 3 Network. So.
I know. I looked into it because I love PayPal. It's simple. It, you know, protects my accounts a little better. So I use that.
Yeah, which you might want to do with Sony, given Sony's track record.
Good point. But no, like, maybe on the Vita you can. I don't know. I just know from the PlayStation 3.
Yeah,
still.
It's just weird because they just really recently completely overhauled their store interface too.
Yeah,
so.
I'd actually like that overall. It's
yeah, no,
good.
Their store once come like me sleeping through Saturday and waking up Saturday in the morning and finally being able to go online, make an account. All that stuff was super easy. You know, once I was able to fucking do it past there, it's like it really ticked me off. But I should like if I had already made my account, I don't think that I would have been really mad at their like schedule like server bullshit. But it just amazes me that, like, the first time in my life, I'm sitting down and being like, okay, I have a PS3 up at this apartment now, I want to make an account, I want to download some of these games, I want to, like, play a PlayStation 3 properly for the first time in my life. It's like, when I decide to make that fucking decision, they've got fucking server maintenance that goes for, like, the entire day that I've decided to do that, so I have to wait until the next day. That's just, like, so fucking crazy that it just happened to be synced up with that, because... I can't imagine that they have the server maintenance bullshit often, right? Have you ever really encountered it? Or would you have even noticed?
This is the cap I wanted to put on this story. Nearly every time I have gone to use the PSN, there has been server maintenance or something stopping me from doing it. And now that being said, it is spectacularly rare in the past that I have gone online with my PlayStation.
Yeah, so it might have been a huge coincidence.
Yeah, but I can tell you right now, I would own at least a couple more downloaded games for my PlayStation 3 if it weren't for the fact that often when I try to sign in, there's either server maintenance or something where, or like, I don't know, servers are fucking busy, whatever the case, where I cannot get on and I just kind of give up. Like, I would have Chrono Trigger, I would probably have one of the later Final Fantasies, I would have, or earlier ones, they've got all of them. It's just, I would have other stuff. Because I've gone to buy it, and it's just like, oh, I can't sign in right now. Well, my Xbox is one shelf up, I'll just hit power on that and play something else, you know.
Yeah, no, it's just...
And this is the thing, I think the PlayStation 3 has a really nice user interface.
It definitely does.
Yeah, it's really clean, it's got a great store, it's well organized, you can customize it to your heart's content, everything on there. Mm-hmm. I think it is probably a superior user interface to the Xbox.
I definitely think so, yeah.
But it's always, it's constantly marred by some of these technical issues that happen every once in a while, and... I am really interested to see what the PS4 is going to look like versus the Xbox 720.
Yeah.
Because I think if the PS4 just smooths out some of the issues the PS3 has had, that might be the console I invest in right off the bat. Because it's, there's some really nice stuff the PS3 does that I really like. And I think just with a couple of tweaks, it could be sort of the ultimate home console for the moment.
Yeah, and then plus that PlayStation Plus service that they have seems like that's a really good deal if you're playing a lot of PlayStation games because, you know, you can get a lot of free games using that.
Oh, and during their holiday sales, you get, oh my god, it's like Steam sale level.
Yeah, no, they have store sales. I saw that when I went to their store. It's like, that's fucking cool because Xbox never does that.
No, and
digital goods on Xbox never go down in price.
No, and PS3 also, you can, it's just got a lot more day one game downloads.
Yeah, so like Far Cry 3 was on there, Devil May Cry, the new Devil May Cry game was on there.
Yeah, pretty much most of the big titles you can just download for your PS3, you don't have to go buy them. Not all of them, because some of them obviously are very big, that's why they use Blu-ray discs, but, you know. No, I think it's got a leg up on Xbox in a lot of areas. I think Xbox wins in terms of internet stability, and, you know, personally, I like some of their exclusives more, but that's totally a taste issue at that point.
Yeah, and then also, I haven't had experience with this with the PlayStation 3, but from what I understand, people tend to like Xbox's, like, Party and Friends service, the chat stuff on that side more, but...
Well, again, the internet... Xbox, just because it's a paid internet service and they can put more into it, Xbox has always had a nicer version of that. And I think what they could do with the PS4 even is beef up PlayStation Plus next time around and just sort of add in some of the things that maybe Xbox does well and really make it competitive that way. Yeah. But having that free level of internet service, that's enticing to a lot of people I know, and it's what's propelled the PlayStation 3 to be the higher seller worldwide.
Yeah. No, well, because, I mean, it is kind of crazy that Xbox Live is a paid service that's... I think it's kind of, I don't know, having a subscription service like that seems kind of backwards with how the internet works, and I don't really like that, but
I understand.
I get stuck into it.
I understand, and I guess I've never complained about it just because it's always stable, and I get what I pay for, but at the same time, I agree, it's like, well, it is 2013.
Yeah, dude, should I really be, like, should I have to pay the subscription service to take this console online?
And again, if the PS4 happens to have... you know, the free online service and all this stuff, and Xbox kind of sticks with some of these things, I might be enticed to move over to that.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. But anyways, so back to my adventures on the PlayStation 3, jumping into the water with the fucking extended server maintenance come Saturday morning now, able to make an account, fucking the easiest shit, that was fantastic, you know, it's nice not having to pay anything just to make an account on the fucking service and be able to bring it online. And then I went to the store interface... like, miles ahead of where the Xbox's store interface is on console. I mean, I use the Xbox website for there to buy shit.
I still hate that, too.
More than I do the Xbox console store.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the PlayStation 3, like, the PlayStation Network store is awesome. I was, like, looking around at the stuff on there. I was weirdly tempted, like, for a brief moment to buy Persona 3 FES on there because you can buy it, even though I fucking have it and am playing it right now. But it's like... but I could have it here, too, on the TV. It's like, oh, well, okay.
They also make it really clear what systems play things.
Yeah, no, that's really nice. It's like everything that's like you can play on the PSP and on the PS Vita. It says like PSP and PS Vita.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to, even though the PS Vita can just play any downloaded PSP games, they still put it on there in case you're a fucking idiot. I really like that, because sometimes we're all really fucking idiots,
right?
And don't realize, and like, we'll buy the wrong thing, or don't realize that we can actually play the thing that we bought.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I did that, and then there were two games that for the longest time I have wanted to play on the PlayStation 3, for the longest time, I should say, since they came out, which is only about, like, 6 months ago, But the biggest one is Journey, which I talked about at the year wrap-up in games as a game that I was not able to play because it was on the PlayStation 3, and that everybody fucking loves the shit out of Journey, but whenever you hear someone talk about it, you don't understand what the fuck Journey's about because it is a really strange game. So I got that, and then I also got the game that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Tokyo Jungle, which is still loaded up on the TV right now that we're looking at, and I was able to... Journey is only like a 3-hour long game, so I was able to play that and beat that, I guess. It's not a game that you really beat, but fucking A, Journey is awesome. Journey is definitely as good as people say it is, and it's definitely a game that people should play, and I'm like making an amendment to my year-end list. At the very least, it is better than The Walking Dead, so fuck The Walking Dead, that's number 5. So fuck off Walking Dead. As much as I really like The Walking Dead, after like playing it, every time I think about The Walking Dead, I just get mad, and I'm still really happy about Journey, so Journey's number 5.
Well, what Sean's referring to is that on his list he had Walking Dead at number 5. He's putting Journey there now, and what he's also referring to is that The Walking Dead is an interesting phenomenon where, despite the game having some sizable flaws, people want to just suck its dick.
Yeah, no, all the people just are so all over The Walking Dead that I just... It's one of those things that... Even though it's really good, people like it way too much, and they like it so much that I can't like it anymore because I don't like those people, and I can't like what those people like, and it fucking pisses me off, because I really should like The Walking Dead. It has the best dialogue system I have ever seen in a fucking game, but, you know, when the entire plot is sort of like bait and switch and just, like, gets rid of tension in a really dumb way that does not involve player choice at all, and when I said this before, but when I think multiple times that my fucking controller is broken because the walking animation is so slow, the game is fucked up. And it's fucked up so much that I cannot leave it at number 5, so retroactively, Journey is now my number 5.
So, do you have any, like, recommendations for, like, how to play Journey, like, when you start, like, if people haven't touched it yet? Because it seems like it is different than other...
I would say play it at night with, like, all the lights off, like, being like this, and don't have, being the, like, a spot where nobody's going to bother you, and have 3 hours of free time, because play that game in one sitting, because even though the game does save and have checkpoints, that's actually one of my complaints with the game, is that it has these sort of discrete chapters that it loads into that should not be there. It should be this one long experience that does not have any, like, breaks in it, but I'm sure there are all probably a lot of technical reasons why that'd be really hard to do, but... It has, like, checkpoints and shit, but don't, like, leave the game and come back to it. That's not the way to play the game. Also, play it online, because it has the coolest co-op I've ever seen in a game, and that would be a game that would be really disappointing to play offline, because basically how the co-op works is that it will, like, seamlessly drop you or drop other people into your world, while in Journey you're basically just walking to get to this mountain. It's the journey, and there's a lot of shit happens on the way. But it'll drop you into other people's games or other people into your games, and you will just kind of walk together. And you have no means of interacting with each other other than, like, you know, you can jump around, you can press the button that, like, kind of just, like, makes this weird little, like, note. This, like, this is one of the things I really like about this game is that when you press, I think it's the square button, you're, like, this little, like, sort of circle pops out, and you use that to just, like, interact with things in the environment. So there's, like... You know, there's, like, this, like, crazy rug thing that's almost like a flying rug, and you walk up to it, and you hold down the square button, and then when you hold it long enough, it's sort of like this big circle pops out and activates anything in that area that you can activate. That's, like, one of your prime ways of interacting with the environment. And every time you press that button, though, it makes a note, and so it's like when you're just walking with other people, you'll just start making notes at each other, kind of like trying to be in time with the song. But yeah, that co-op feature is, like, the coolest part of the game. I think that really makes the game. And I kind of... I don't want it to go on about Journey for too long because it's a really short game and there's not a lot you can say about it other than just play it for yourself. But sort of, like, my experience with the game that sort of made me really fall in love with the game was actually just at the very, very end where the whole time while you're going on this journey, you know, there's a lot of shit happens. You can't really lose Journey, but... Like, it sort of does take you through this really basic, it's like almost like symphonic musical experience in a way, where it's like just all about emotion. There's this sort of framework of a story about there was a civilization and the civilization collapsed and you need to get to the mountain for some reason. I wasn't really able to decipher that, But it's all about sort of just these emotions that the music and the visuals convey of, like, there's of discovery and, like, death and depression and loneliness and then, like, togetherness and triumph and stuff like that. And when I had gotten to a certain point in the game, there's, like, three chapters out, getting kind of close to the end of the game, I was, like, me and this other dude just happened to, like, meet up with each other. We were, like, dropped into each other's worlds. And I was with this dude then from that point to the rest of the game. And that's, like, and at that point of the game, it's sort of a lot more harrowing, and it's sort of having another person there is just kind of really comforting because the game throws a lot of shit at you. And so, like, me and you get this really weird sense of camaraderie with this guy where we're just sort of walking through this frozen wasteland trying to make it to this fucking mountain, and our dudes are, like, freezing to death. And there's just, like, this other dude here, and you're just walking, and you're walking, and you're walking. And then at one point, you, like, get to this point where you have this sort of triumphant moment, and it's like you're kind of making it to the end, and then I thought I had lost the dude. And I was, like, looking around, it's like, oh, fuck, did he drop out of the world? What happened? Where's my dude? And it's like, oh, fuck, but I have to keep on going. I have to make it to the mountain. So I'm going, like, the music is swelling, all this cool stuff is happening, and then I get to this point where I'm on this ledge, and just in front of me is, like, this, like, you know, if I just go straight, there's, like, this wall of bright light that's, like, that's the end of the game. I just have to go there, and if I go there, I win. And I, like, walk halfway there, and I stop. I'm like, that dude has got to be somewhere around there here. So I stop, I look around, I'm like, where is this guy? Come on, he's got to be here. I'm like, and then so I start hammering on the note button, just to, like, making notes, because while we were walking through the frozen tundra, we would just, like, note at each other in beat with the song sometimes. So it's like, that was, like, your only way of interacting with each other. So I was, like, hitting the note button, like, come on, where is this dude? And it's like, I was waiting there for, like, a minute, like, he's gone, he's nowhere, and I turn around, and I start walking towards the end, and then I hear something, I'm like, what was that? And I just hear this, like, in the, like, really far away, I'm like, I just hear this, like, boop, doop, 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 I'm like, no way, and I turn around, and it's, like, shrouded in the mist at the ledge that I had come up on, I see this, like, lone figure, and then I just hear, like, boop, doop, boop, and then, like, I boop, doop, boop, back, and I see him walk up, and he walks up to me, and we both stop, and we turn, and then we walk to the end of the game. It was fucking amazing. And that's, like, that's what's incredible about Journey, is I feel like the system of having that co-op in there and just the way they structure how beautiful the game is and how beautiful the music is and how well they hit those emotional beats that they try to hit, that everybody has those moments and everybody is going to have a different moment because they're going to have these different people with them at different points in time. And that was, like, mine, was that, like, I finally... Because a lot of the other people I've encountered in the game were kind of like jackasses, where they would be, like, fucking around. There was, like, one dude who was always just really obsessive about trying to check every corner of, like, every environment for, like, because there are a few collectibles, but they're really easy to find, so I knew he wasn't going to find anything that I would miss. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to leave that guy behind. And eventually I find this, like, one dude, and we make it through all this shit together, and he finally comes up, and it's like... And the cool thing is that for that dude, what happened was... He, like, his friend all of a sudden is gone, and then when he makes it to the end of the game, he sees that his friend is waiting for him there, and then they walk to the end together. And it's like, everybody is going to have moments like that, and that's what makes Journey so fucking amazing.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, no, it's really fucking cool. There's no game like Journey. And the cool thing about Journey is that, you know, that kind of stuff that I've talked about is what everybody talks about, but there is this sense of a game there that there's... It just feels really good to move in the world. There's some really basic sort of, like, puzzles and stuff like that. And so I was thought when everyone talks about the game, they sound really fucking pretentious. And I hope I didn't sound like this, like, pretentious gaming fucker that, like, everyone who talks about Journey sounds like that to me.
No, you sounded like maybe, like, for the first time on this podcast, you had a soul.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's, it's like, that's a weird thing. By completely eliminating your ability to actually interact with other people, it makes it so that you can interact with other people on the internet. Because if you were able to voice chat with that dude, I'd hate that fucking guy's guts. Because he'd be some fucking idiot. And it's like, he'd be like yelling in his mic, he'd be singing, he'd be calling me a motherfucking nigger faggot or whatever. And it's like, it would completely ruin the experience. But the fact that we can't do that, it's like, that dude's probably a fucking asshole. I am a fucking asshole, but we have this weird sense of camaraderie now, just like, we did that. There is some dude somewhere in the world to we did that together, and it's like, we made it to the end. And one other thing, and I actually kind of wish the game did not do this, is that at the end of the ending credits, it pops up this message that's like shows the PlayStation Network ID names for all the people you've met on your journey, which sounds cool in theory that it's like, okay, now I get to know the names of all these people, and maybe, you know, if I'm really inclined to, I could have looked up. I don't even remember that guy's name because I don't have any interest in actually finding out what he's like in real life. But it's like, yeah, you know, you could like get in touch and like send that dude a message. It's like, yeah, yeah, we did it, bro. We made it to the end. But in practice, what happens is then you like get all these messages of like XX weed smoker XX met you on your journey and shit like that, because nobody's PlayStation like online ID is a name that you'd want to see associated to such an emotional experience. It's like, I'm not saying it should be, because it's like, you know, nobody wants to see like some like really pretentious fuck off name in there as their PlayStation Network ID. But it's like, when you see that come up at the end, it's like, yeah, I went to the end with that guy. It's like, oh, that's what his name is. Oh, that guy's a jerk. Jesus.
All right. That may be one of my favorite segments we've ever done.
Yeah,
love that. I love that as soon as I accuse you of having a soul,
then I start calling people assholes.
Here. Yeah. Reverse all that good work.
Well, I mean, it is, I think, like, the Journey is just a really, really smart game, and I think it understands psychology, in that it is smart that they very deliberately do not allow you to interact with people in a meaningful way, and that makes your interaction really meaningful, because you're not able to fuck it up.
No, I will definitely take a night this week, because I'm still taking some time off from normal like movie reviewing, and just mainly to play a bunch of games.
Yeah, eventually when our Mass Effect podcast comes around.
Yeah, actually, I'm also working on a project that we will talk about on the podcast soon. That's the real reason I've not been writing a lot for the site, but the other benefit is I've been spending some time on games. But anyway, I will take a night this week and play Journey, because this sounds awesome.
Yeah, it'd probably be pretty cool if that the headset too, because the music is really well done.
Well, I've heard that it's got a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, so a 7.1 with that would be awesome. I'm excited to do that.
You can note at people in 7.1 surround sound.
But as long as we're talking about emotional, visceral experiences, I think you have to tell us about Tokyo Jungle.
Yeah,
I have to say, I have had a blast today just sitting and watching you play Tokyo Jungle.
Yeah, so after I finished playing Journey, and I was like, holy shit, that was an incredible experience, I then sat down and played the other game that I downloaded, as you said, Tokyo Jungle. And there is no more like opposite of a game that could exist than Journey in Tokyo Jungle. Because what Tokyo Jungle is, the conceit of the game is that mankind has vanished. It's like all of a sudden mankind is gone. You know, the world is in disrepair. You're in Tokyo, and Tokyo is overgrown with, you know, with like lush vegetation. The buildings have collapsed. Pets are running loose. Zoos have, like, the wild animals from the zoos are going fucking crazy. As the game says, racing horses have been freed from their servitude, because for some reason the game's really fucking concerned about what happens to the racing horses, because apparently we enslaved them. We didn't enslave the zoo animals or the pets, but the racing horses freed from their servitude. And in Tokyo Jungle, you get to play as those animals living in post-apocalyptic Tokyo, with all the humans suddenly fucking gone, and the entire game is basically survival. That's like, that's the main mode, is just called survival. There is a story mode that you unlock missions for, that I played two of the missions, and it seems like they're leading to, because you also pick up like these like diary entries, it seems like they're leading to an explanation for why humanity is gone, and I'm super fucking excited to find out what they're going to come up with, because this is the craziest fucking game I have played since Persona 4. Because, you know, there's nothing crazy like Japanese crazy, you know, where they can just come up with a just crazy fucking idea and then fucking go for it.
Basically, what it strikes me as is, it's like an animal sim. It's like Sim City, but with animals. And not like,
but really like a dark version of that.
Yeah.
Because it's not like this happy Connectimals type where you pet the bears. It is, I'm a fucking Pomeranian, and I just killed 15 cats, and I am now eating all their corpses. And I'm going to go fuck some bitch and have some kids. Because that's what animals do. They eat, they fuck, and they have kids.
Yeah, so that's what struck me as is that, apart from some of the like flourishes and then obviously the story mode, just the pure survival game mechanics is, it's, you're just an animal, and it's pretty accurate to how an animal would live.
Yeah.
Or does live. And it's funny how little they spruce up what you do as an animal.
Yeah, no, it's like literally all, you can play as two different types of animals. They're predators and they're grazers. And so basically the grazers have the, like, they have to survive by going and finding plants and eating the plants, and that fills your hunger meter up because you will die from hunger really fast in that game. If you're a predator, you have to go kill other animals and eat them. And so, yeah, basically what you have to do is you survive by doing that, and then you also have to reproduce because all your animals have, like, a 15-year or so lifespan. Like, once you hit 15 years, they start getting weaker, and then I assume eventually at past that point, eventually they'll just die of old age if you don't reproduce quickly enough. So yeah, that's the entire goal of the game, basically, is just trying to survive, and then it'll give you these little challenges to complete along the way to unlock points, and then as some of those challenges will also unlock animals that then you can then unlock by using your points that you've got. So the game is just like this like vicious cycle of just trying to make it as far as you can to be able to unlock the next animal and get enough points to actually buy them, and then play as that animal, because then that animal's challenges will then unlock another animal, and just keep on doing that. And I'm not particularly far into this game. I have the Pomeranian, the Sikadir, which are the two you start with. I've also unlocked the cat. I played as the chick for a very short time before playing this. That's where the music comes from, was me playing as the chick. And then I also unlocked I unlocked a gazelle also that I have not yet played as.
That could be fun. Gazelles are cool.
But, yeah, no, this game is fucking crazy, and it's super fun to play.
To me, when I came in and sat down, this to me defines, it epitomizes the PlayStation.
Yeah, like, there's something really weirdly, like, PlayStation-y about it.
Yeah, because I agree. Here's the thing, like, I've actually owned each of the PlayStations, though I've never played any of them extensively, but I have had friends and, like, cousins and people who love PlayStation, and so I have fond memories of going over to other people's houses, or at the holidays, going to, like, my family's house, and them having their PlayStation out, and just the kind of games you discover other PlayStation owners playing, and when I walked into the apartment today, and Sean's sitting on the couch, running around as a Pomeranian, just killing shit and eating its corpses, it's like, that's PlayStation. I didn't even have to look at what console you had turned on. It's just like, that's PlayStation, and it's like...
Because that's a good point, because there's no fucking way you'd ever play Tokyo Jungle on the Xbox 360. I don't know why that is, but there's no fucking way. No. The game would just never be on the Xbox.
You don't kill your foes with guns, that's why.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, there's just like the weird, like quirky, but really serious element to it. Tokyo Jungle is a fucking PlayStation game.
Totally.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about Tokyo Jungle is just because, you know, you can see the, like, the silhouettes of all the other animals that you can unlock, and, like, some of them look like dinosaurs, so I'm pretty sure you can get fucking dinosaurs in this game. But then also, you know, you very quickly realize that, like, every single animal you run into the world will then be an animal you eventually play as. You know, like, I've killed chicks, I killed a shit ton of fucking cats. And so, like, so it's just like, you know, when I run into, like, my first time playing the game as a Pomeranian, I was doing really fucking good. I got, like, the third generation, so I'd reproduced three times. I got to, like, the third tier of challenges, and I was feeling really good. Like, my Pomeranians were fucking badass, because you're able to level up your characters, and then as you reproduce, you play as their spawn, basically, you play as their children, and they have, like, almost as good as the stats as their parents, so then you level them up, and then they get to the point above their parents, and so you have this, we like to kind of leapfrog your levels. And so my Pomeranians were pretty powerful. Like, they were just slaughtering cats, killing a cat in one, like, paw strike. And so I was like, and then I'm in fucking Shibuya Station, because all this takes place in, like, actual Tokyo, this, like, actual section of Tokyo. And I run into a motherfucking bear. I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can take a fucking bear. I've killed wolves. I killed a whole fucking pack of wolves 5 seconds ago. I went out of that battle fucking unscathed. I've got, like, my four brothers and sisters behind me that are just extra lives, basically. This is how you get extra lives in that game. It's like, when you get to have children, you have, like, you get a whole bunch. So your, like, brothers and sisters just follow you around. And like, I can kill a fucking bear. I did not kill the bear. I did not even get... I don't think I touched the bear. Like, I attacked the bear. My claws hit the bear. They did nothing. That bear's health bar did not fucking move.
I think that's how it works in the real world, too.
Yeah, no, it's like, you get to this point where it's like, you know...
You get cocky.
Yeah, you get really cocky. You feel really good about how powerful your Pomeranian is. And you're like, I can do this. I also had, like, a couple of, like, medicine things in my inventory. Because you also have an inventory, which is, like, one-use items. But you can also get, like, hats and shit, which is amazing because the animals look... Because it's just a Pomeranian in, like, a sun visor, which is just dumb, but great. And those are for, like, all the animals. So you also have a chick, like, a little, like, baby chick in a hat. That's awesome. It's like, I was feeling really good, that fucking bear just slaughtered me in, like, a second, and all of my children, like, all my siblings. It's like, and they're just, it was just fucking carnage, there was blood everywhere, it was horrible. And then when you die, you're fucking dead. Like, you don't get to, like, you know, restart.
That's life.
Yeah, but that's life. You just like, oh shit, I'll load up a new game.
Well, that's not life.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you know, that might be life. That might be on the back end and we just don't know about it. That's like resurrection. But
I want to live in Korea this time.
Yeah, but you don't get to remember that once you're actually living in Korea. And it's like, it's like, man, I really wish I could remember this shit because I don't want to start another fight with a goddamn bear.
Yeah.
Because the bear will kill you. And it's like, and so yeah, but then you just will load up with either different animal or go back in as the Pomeranian, as I did, and got really far again, and then got slaughtered by a hippopotamus. That time I knew what I was doing, but I just couldn't run away from the hippopotamus fast enough before the hippopotamus killed me, because hippopotamuses are sadistic motherfuckers, and they will chase your ass down. So don't fuck with anything that's like 10 times your size in the game. Because if you don't know what a Pomeranian is like this shitty little dog, like it's chihuahua size, but it's really fuzzy. And you feel, and it's like, even though you're this shitty little dog, you feel like you can take a bear sometimes, but you can't take a bear. You have to work your way up till you are a bear, and then you can kill some motherfucking bears.
And see, I think this is what I love about Tokyo Jungle so much, from what I've seen you play of it, is that what you just said, that is completely applicable to everyday life.
Yeah.
You may think, like, you may have thought, you know, at this point in your life, you've done a lot of stuff. You've gotten pretty good at what you like to do, and you think, you know, man, I can take other people. I can do this.
Yeah.
But you're really just a Pomeranian, and you got to work harder. And if you're gonna fight the bear, you have to do better.
You gotta be the bear to fight the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I think Tokyo Jungle and Journey, as different as they are work on similar philosophical planes.
I guess, yeah. Like, Journey is a much more spiritual experience, whereas, like, Tokyo Jungle is, like, this really physical, just, like, pessimistic, like, this is how life is. It's, like, you fucking survive for as long as you can, and then you fucking die, and that's it. Like, that's what Tokyo Jungle is like, and Journey is, like, you know, you will go through some hardships in your life, but if you, like, stick with the people around you, eventually you will find enlightenment and salvation. It's like, no, fuck that, Tokyo Jungle. There's no salvation. Humanity is gone. Racehorses have been freed from servitude. Survive for as long as you can, motherfucker. And it's not going to be long. That's Tokyo Jungle. And goddammit, is it a fun fucking game.
Alright. The next thing I want to talk about on this podcast, now that it took us a long time to get through our little PlayStation segment.
Yeah, this is like...
It's a good segment.
Yeah, that's... There's one other thing, really quickly, I want to say about the PlayStation, is that it'd been, like, before I started playing these games, it'd been a really long time since I used a PlayStation controller, and I've forgotten how weird it is, where you, because, you know, with the PlayStation controller, you have the two analog sticks that are on, like, the lower axis together, and my thumbs touch each other on the analog sticks all the fucking time, when I'm moving right and trying to look left. It's weird. I don't like it. That's like, other than that, I'm totally fine with the PlayStation controller. It's that one thing. It's really weird when my thumbs touch each other when I'm holding a controller.
Because you're so used to Xbox.
Yeah, and it's just like, I'm just so used to not having that happen. Like, it's just like, it's really weird when you're really into a game.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, my thumbs are touching each other.
That's true. Yeah, it happens.
It's really weird. It's like this weird physical sensation that takes you out of it for a second. It's like, oh, that, I'm holding a controller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So should I do the next segment of this podcast while playing Tokyo Jungle?
No, but I should.
Okay, no, because we're talking about something serious.
Okay. All right,
what I want to talk about now, Sean,
yes,
is the movie Zero Dark Thirty, which you saw this weekend.
Yes, I did. I saw it on Saturday.
Yeah. Now, the movie's been out for a while in some areas, but it really just came out like a weekend or two ago for most people, so I think it's still very relevant.
Yeah.
And I think it's relevant because, you know, it just won a bunch of Golden Globes, it's got a bunch of Oscar nominations, and Republicans have stirred up a lot of stupid controversy about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people talking about stuff in the movie that's like, I don't feel like they saw the movie when they talk about it.
So, Sean, would you say Zero Dark Thirty is pro-torture?
No, God, no. It's definitely not pro-torture.
What kind of half-brained retard do you have to be to think... And no offense to people with mental disabilities.
Yes.
I'm using retard in the sense of, you think Zero Dark Thirty is pro-torture. Any mentally ill or mentally disturbed or mentally handicapped person could watch Zero Dark Thirty and still understand that it is not pro-torture.
Yeah, I think the only way you could possibly think Zero Dark Thirty is pro-torture is if you really like torturing people. And then it's like, yeah, okay, I really like waterboarding people. It's like, this movie has waterboarding people, and it's fucking awful, but if you like torture, it's like, yeah, sure, that's great.
Just jack off in the theater to it. Just be like, waterboarding, let me get my dick out.
Yeah, exactly. I highly recommend that. Just like, go ahead, if you have that impulse watching this movie, go ahead and do it. Just do it.
So you can go to jail and we never have to see you again.
Well, you're not supposed to tell them that part.
Okay. Sorry, Sean.
Now they'll figure it out.
Anyway, let's go back to the beginning. I want to get into this issue more because I think it's a fascinating part of the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
But really quick, you know, I love Zero Dark Thirty. I thought it was one of the best films of the year. It came in number 11 on my overall countdown. Just missed out of the top 10 for no qualitative reason other than that I was more interested in sort of the character-based elements of the other 10 movies on my list. But Zero Dark Thirty is a great film. I think it's a really, really cool follow-up and companion piece to The Hurt Locker, which I loved when it came out. And Jessica Chastain is fantastic, and so is the rest of the cast. And I think it's really interesting that they got this perspective so close to the historical events.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a great example of journalistic storytelling on film. But what did you think of it?
Basically everything you just said. I thought it was a really, really remarkably done film. I think it's an interest, particularly for me, it's a really interesting companion piece to Lincoln, which came out earlier this year. Because they're both sort of biopics that revolve around, like, really tumultuous historical times. Obviously, Zero Dark Thirty is very, very recently historical times. But they also deal with, like, these very sort of significant issues of, like, people having to make these decisions that are costing lives and, like, looking at the ramifications of that and how serious those decisions are and how hard those decisions are to make. And I think then they kind of, you know, Lincoln seems like a much sort of ultimately happier film in how it portrays its historical events, even though it's not a happy film. But Zero Dark Thirty is definitely kind of sort of our times.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Looking at how, just sort of like kind of the face of war, how different it is now. Where, you know, with their attack, like, their task of trying to find Osama bin Laden is that, like, they have to find just one dude. Like, they're looking for one dude. But how fucking hard is it to just find one dude if he does not want to be found?
What I love about this movie so much is that, you know, the Jessica Chastain character, who is apparently, she's not an amalgamation at all. That's a real person. In the CIA.
Jessica Chastain is a real person.
Yes, no, her character Maya. Now, they've changed her name and, appearance, all this, because she's undercover. And they don't want to, you know, good for them not trying to out a CIA agent.
Yeah.
Apparently a CIA hero, you would probably say. But anyway, it's so interesting that the whole movie, you have that focal point character and you see what this search does to her over 10 years. And just how she's nothing at the end of that movie. She doesn't know what she is, and I just love that sense of how her identity evolves to the point where she just becomes this hunt.
Yeah, she becomes completely obsessed because she spends like 11 years of her life in the CIA just trying to find one dude.
And she loses so much for it, and it's like at a certain point, you can't go back. You can't abandon it, and so you just have to push forward, and it's... But these are heavy moral and ethical and just logical issues you're dealing with in this hunt for Osama bin Laden. It's, you know, because at the end of the movie, I don't really think you can spoil this movie.
Yeah, but spoilers, Osama bin Laden dies at the end.
Yeah, but if you haven't seen it and you want to experience it all for yourself, probably stop listening now because maybe we'll go in a little deeper now. But what I was going to say is in the last scene of the movie, after they've killed Osama bin Laden, they bring his body back to the compound. Maya goes over and she has to confirm... To ID it. She looks at the body, sees it, and I really like how they frame that you don't see. You never see Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, I like that too, that they don't like focusing on the body or anything.
Yeah, it's all her.
Yeah.
And you see her, and then she walks away, and I think they even how they cut this is interesting, where you get the sense that she doesn't know where she's going at all. She's just on autopilot at this point. And she gets in the plane, and they ask her where she wants to go, and it's sort of an obvious metaphor, but I think it works because Jessica Chastain's really good. And she says she doesn't know, and it's just sort of the last shots of the movie are just focusing on her face as she's trying to process this, and she just can't.
Yeah.
And I think for so many people, in the wake of Osama bin Laden's death, that's sort of what that was like, is that in many ways, the initial reaction is like, oh, a period of American history is over. We got Osama bin Laden. And then it sets in like, well, what's next? What did we actually accomplish?
Yeah, it's like, and what exactly did that do that we, like, killed this one guy?
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who deserved everything he got, but it's like...
Yeah, but But, you know, this is, like, our country had made him into such a, like, an iconic figure. Like, this, we so immensely demonized him that it's like, when you're, it's like, you know, you actually fucking killed him. It's like, well, now what? I mean, at the end of the day, he is a guy. It's not like this, we did not save the world. We did not end, like, you know,
terrorism.
We did not end all tumultuous times here on Earth by killing Osama bin Laden. But that's kind of how that figure was built up as. Yeah. I have to imagine it's almost something similar, like, you know, I can't imagine, like, when Hitler died, like, World War II ended, it's like, holy, like, how do you, like, comprehend that, that it's, like, this figure that just so immensely demonized, just made to be the most, like, terrible, like, human that has ever walked the earth and is actually dead. It's like, almost like you can't, like, believe that this figure has actually died because they've made to seem immortal.
And I just think the whole movie grapples with these emotions so well. And for the most part, it's a fairly emotionless piece. It's very stark, it's very journalistic, it's very matter-of-fact and almost documentary-esque in the way it shows its events. But around the Maya character, I do think they do some really good character building where we really understand what she's going through. And it just especially, I just think it ends so well in leaving you with the same feeling you had the day Osama bin Laden dies. Which is, you don't know how to feel. That's the main thing. It's you can't even put it into words. It's just like, well, what do I feel now?
Mm-hmm.
And especially for her, because she was the epicenter of this. And it's just, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it is the best way you could possibly tackle that subject matter. Especially, like, being as close as we are to it now.
Yeah.
That they don't. Like, at least, you know, this is just how I sort of saw the film. But I don't think it has any political spin on it at all.
No,
like,
this was the whole crux of my review, is that why I think the film is so good. And it's this exact same thing the Hurt Locker did. It's journalistic.
Yes.
Yeah. And more so than the Hurt Locker, because the Hurt Locker is fictional characters.
Yeah.
But it's in a setting where they were just trying to show this is what soldiers do in Iraq on a day-to-day basis. And it was very matter-of-fact and well-researched in that regard. This is all real, for the most part. And, I mean, obviously dialogue, they don't know what people actually said. But it's mostly, it's just like, well, step by step by step, to the best of our knowledge as, you know, the people researching this movie, Mark Bull, the writer, what happened. And it's not about putting a spin on what happened or selectively picking. It's just like, what are the steps that were necessary to get to this point? And presenting it really without even affect. It's just, this is what happens. And to me, and I think it's very much, it's going to be a sounding board for your own beliefs and what you see in
it. Yeah, that's how I feel about it too, that I feel in a lot of ways. You know, that's why I was saying at the beginning that you're only going to feel that this movie is pro-torture if you go in kind of feeling that way yourself, is that you're going to come out of that movie feeling what you feel going into that movie. Like, it's not going to inform you, it's not going to change your political opinions. You're going to find something in that movie that is going to back up what you already believe. Like, there's just something about the way that movie is made that you're going to be able to interpret it to back up your political beliefs in almost any way if you're looking to do that. But if you're looking at it sort of in a much more objective sense and just looking at the movie as a whole, you sort of realize that it is this very stark journalistic presentation of, like, this is how things actually happened, and that's why you feel about the way the things that happened in the movie the way you did in real life, because they just represent that so accurately and so well.
And as someone who is generally uncomfortable with the idea of torture, the first 15 minutes of the movie are so hard to watch, and they are... And I think it's because they present it, again, without affect. It's just, this is how we torture people. And holy shit, that is, that's brave filmmaking. I just want to say, I think that is, to put that on film and then expect it, you know, you were going to put this film in wide release and show this to people, to a country that tries to ignore what it did to other people, that is some stark filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I just, I've never seen a visual presentation of waterboarding before. That's hard to watch.
Yeah.
It's like, you think about it, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, it's a big shock. Torture is kind of a fucked up thing.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that the movie does well with that sequence, is that this is why I don't understand how anyone could come out of that movie saying, like, really believing that the movie itself is sort of saying pro-torture, is that, I mean, one, the movie does not try to make, like, this, like, really strong connection between we found Osama bin Laden because of torture. Like, it's such a long chain that's, like, we could have found, like, that information any number of
ways. And they do. That's the point
They do, like, they find that information out from, like, a bunch of different sources.
That's, well,
like,
ultimately, the guy who tells them, he doesn't break because of torture. He breaks because they just give him some bad info.
Yeah, no. It's just, like, they... So it's like, it doesn't make this like case for torture being a really effective way of extracting information, because, you know, it isn't. If you like to actually look at the research, torture is not a very good way of trying to get accurate information from people. But what the movie does is that it has sort of, at least for that section of the movie, you have Jessica Chastain's character and, I don't know, like, but the other, like, kind of the male lead at that point, because of the other CIA agent.
It's not Joel Edgerton, I forget his name, I'll look it up, he's really good. Yeah.
But those two characters for, like, the beginning, like, half of the movie, they're together for most of the movie, and they're basically your main characters, and they very smartly don't have those characters either condone or completely reject torture. Like,
yeah.
You know, those characters are doing the torture, but they both seem very uncomfortable about it, but neither of them then goes on this huge spiel about how torture is awful, because obviously they're doing it. And so the movie does not present an opinion either way, because how it would present an opinion is through those two characters if it was trying to make some sort of argument or message.
The actor's name is Jason Clark, and he's very, very good in this movie.
I really like that character.
The closest they come to doing what you were just talking about is there is a scene late in the movie, because Jason Clark, really the only actor who's in all of it is Jessica Chastain. Otherwise, people just come in and out. And Jason Clark's in the beginning, and then he comes back a little bit at the end, and you find out he's been, you know, doing other things since.
Like, yeah, he went to have a desk job.
Yeah, and he just has this speech sort of about, and it's very underplayed, but it's sort of about what his experience has taught him. And what's so interesting to me in that scene is that's the scene where you would have him say, you know, my soul was destroyed by torture. He doesn't do that.
Yeah,
he just says, he's like,
tired.
Yeah, he's tired. And he's saying, I think he specifically even says, you know, I don't necessarily regret what I did. It's like, I just can't do it anymore. And so it's very, they're still very, very balanced, if you want to use that word, in their presentation of these characters. And it feels more true to life to me because of that. Just everything about this movie feels authentic, and that's what's so interesting about it to me.
Yeah, I agree. It also has, like, this really weird, like, John Barrowman is in the movie for, like, 2 seconds. I think his character's name is, like, Jeremy, because he follows, I think it's the CIA director, into an elevator. Yeah. And it's like, that's John Barrowman. What the fuck is John Barrowman? Why is John Barrowman in this movie? If you don't know who John Barrowman is, he plays Captain Jack Harkness in Doctor Who and Torchwood. I was like,
but there's
weird. I did not, of like all the actors I thought would be in this movie, it's like fucking John Barrowman. What the fuck?
They do a ton of that though. Like every single part in this movie is like a notable character actor. So you have like, you know, Chris Pratt, who's best known for Parks and Recreation, and he's the silliest character on a really funny comedy. He's part of the SEAL team that goes and kills Bin Laden. You've got, like, you know, Joel Edgerton in there. Joel Edgerton's a great actor, but he's only in the end as part of the SEAL team. Mark Strong is in, I think, one scene to give that big speech to the team, but it's Mark Strong, and he's really good, and normally he'd be, like, the lead in a movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they got Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights, Edgar Ramirez, Mark Duplass, Frank Grillo. It's just there's people everywhere. Harold Perrineau from Lost and Oz is in, like, one scene. James Gandolfini is in one scene. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, that's, to me, is so cool, because it really, there's more weight to the whole movie, because every single performance is really good. Even if it's a little tiny performance.
John Barrowman had like one line in the movie. It's like,
And he's good.
Yeah. It's like, it's just like, I don't know. I was expecting David Tennant all of a sudden to show up. It's like, well, okay. This is weird.
David Tennant plays Osama bin Laden.
Maybe he did. They didn't like really show the body almost at all. So it's like, maybe that was David Tennant in makeup and we didn't even realize.
How fantastic
would that be on like the bonus scene, like the bonus features on the DVD to see that?
That'd be great. He like pulls off the beard and
hello.
Yeah. Anyway, the scene I want to talk about though, like before we stop talking about this movie, is how fucking incredible, just a feat of direction, is the raid on the Bin Laden compound. That is one of the best action scenes I've ever seen, and I don't even know if I would call it an action scene.
I wouldn't call it an action scene.
But like in terms of being on the edge of my seat, that was the tensest I was in a movie theater all year, and I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I knew every beat of it, because you know the helicopter is going to get set on fire. They're going to have problems landing. They're going to go around this corner, and they're going to have to shoot the woman. They're going to you know, get up to the top floor and find Bin Laden. But they do it so effectively, and it's just so palpable and authentic, and they go through every little step down to, you know, the little hand signals they make and just the ways they turn their guns as they're going around corners. And you're just so immersed in it that you are just, there's parts where I just forgot to breathe during that scene. It is really well done.
Really well done. I don't know, like, how much to say about it, because, it is
just
really well directed, and it's like, and that's, like, the part of the movie that feels the most like how the Hurt Locker felt to me. She brings those, like, really effective ways of bringing out tension and really, like, I mean, it's not a short scene, but like just like moments in the film. Yeah. She brings that Hurt Locker feel to it. The rest of the movie is a lot more dialogue based.
So here's something. We don't talk about the Academy Awards a lot here, but I just want to make fun of them for a minute.
Okay, sure.
They clearly liked Zero Dark Thirty. Jessica Chastain's got a nomination. It's up for Best Picture, Best Screenplay. It's got some nominations. Mm-hmm. They did not nominate Catherine Bigelow for Best Director. In what way could you nominate Zero Dark Thirty for Best Picture and not say it was one of the best directed films of the year?
Yeah, that's a good point, because the directing is such a big part of that movie.
That's all. Yeah. It is a feat of direction.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like, I did my Dream Academy Awards exercise on the site just for fun, and I don't think I had her in my top five, but I'm also working with films that I knew the Academy was never going to look at, and so that's different. But if you look at the actual films the Academy nominated, it's really, really strange that they ignored, of the people who actually they nominated for directing, her work was more impressive, I think, than any of theirs. She's a really, really good director.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, the direction in this movie is what makes the movie. Like, all the other elements are really well done, but it's like the direction is the most important part, I feel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she should be up for it.
Totally.
The movie's up for it.
Yeah. Anyway, what sort of, between this and The Hurt Locker, which movie did you like better?
It's been a couple of years since I saw The Hurt Locker. I would probably say Zero Dark Thirty, because I think, ultimately, I just find the subject matter a little more interesting. Even though I did like the more character-focused direction of The Hurt Locker, there's just, I don't know. I found this more like an intellectually interesting experience, just because of all the Obama stuff, the Osama stuff, and that's all still so fresh in mind.
Yeah. I think I would probably say something very similar. To me, it's like, I think Zero Dark Thirty is probably a more impressive movie overall. I definitely feel like they took what they learned on Hurt Locker and built from that.
Yeah.
I think I like The Hurt Locker a little more just because, again, I am drawn to character pieces more than anything else, and that is very much a character piece.
Yeah.
But they complement each other in very interesting ways. While they cover very different subject matter, I think it's just Catherine Bigelow and Mark Boll, the writer and director of these movies. I want to see them make more movies of this ilk, because they are the best at it.
Yeah, I agree. Once you do the We Killed a Bin Laden movie, it's like, what movie are they going to make next?
Kill Hitler, the movie.
How crazy would it be if they just decided, it's like, fuck it, we're going to make a World War II movie now, like this?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. That's what they should do. They should make a World War II movie like this.
All right. They can make the Call of Duty movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, license Call of Duty out from Activision. Make it like base it on like the specific campaigns in Call of Duty 2, and call it Call of Duty 2 the movie. Because nobody gives a shit about Call of Duty 1.
All right. Is there anything else to talk about on this podcast?
I don't think so. I think we pretty well covered it.
I want to say I am almost done with Mass Effect 2. My playthrough is like at 21 hours now. Those 21 hours were collected in under 7 days. I feel kind of, I don't know,
that's enlightened. That's nothing, bro. But 21 hours in 7 days, it's nothing.
I feel like I'm taking my first steps into a larger world.
Try 21 and 2, and then you can talk to me, because I did 30 and 2 with Mass Effect 3 at the very least. So, there you go.
I think my Mass Effect 2 playthrough will have to be at least like 25 to 30 when it's done.
That's about how long like a full playthrough of that game is.
And I've done fucking everything. I have every DLC, and I've done every DLC but Arrival, which I'm waiting to do.
Yeah.
And I've done every side quest I get. It's like Mass Effect 2 is so good, I just want to do everything, even the parts that don't interest me. Like when you find an ID on the ground, and you're like, let's go find who owns this ID. I don't know why that's in the game. I have no clue why that's in the game.
It's just one of those weird, you know, RPGs are just, it's such a genre that's so beholden to tradition, especially JRPGs, where it's like, that's one of the things I really like about Persona 4 is that game takes like such huge leaps and leaving behind so many like old JRPG tropes and traditions. It's like, but Mass Effect 2 specifically does that in so many really amazing ways, where like tries to get at the core of what an RPG is. And there's still a few things that it's like, this is just a completely pointless fucking fetch quest. I found, like, a Salarian watch in the slums of the Citadel. I have to go find some random dude I over... Like, Mass Effect 3 is even worse about it. Because what Mass Effect 3 does with those quests is fucking dumb. This is, like, the stupidest part of about Mass Effect 3. You can mostly just ignore it. But those quests are, like, you're just, like, walking around the Citadel, and you'll overhear someone talking about, like, there's something somewhere in the galaxy, it's like, whatever, I lost my teddy bear over on Ilos. And it's like, Then eventually, you know, your quests take you to Ilos and you find, like, a teddy bear item. And then you just walk up to that person and be like, I overheard you talking about this. Here you go. And it's like, it's really efficient because you don't have to talk to anyone to get the quest. The quest will just, like, pop up in your quest log when you overhear the dialogue walking around. But it just makes it super awkward. It's like, for some reason, RPGs just have to have dumb padding fetch quests. It's like, they just found the most efficient way to do it possible in Mass Effect 3, but it just makes it all the highlights even more how pointless it all is.
And I would think they would have gotten rid of those in Mass Effect 3 because you have bigger things to deal with at that point.
Yeah, you do. That's why it's super fucking dumb.
They fit in Mass Effect 2 generally because, you know, you've got some time.
Yeah.
You're taking your time to get your team together and stuff, but anyway. We will probably, by the way, be doing a full Mass Effect podcast once I'm done with my full playthrough. I'm sure I'll be done with the trilogy by the end of the month.
Yeah, so, probably, yeah.
Yeah, which, holy shit, I've been playing through these at a good pace for me.
Yeah, compared to your, like, Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, we were, Sean and I were talking about this the other day, like, just, like, calculations. Like, okay, I played Red Dead Redemption, it took me 2 years to beat that game. And just because I'm lazy, I could have probably beaten it in a week if I really wanted to. But it took me, like, 2 years to play Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
Now, any given Mass Effect game is substantially longer than that. For the main
Like, given if, like, you play Red Dead Redemption and say you don't even know you can buy the bandolier, you probably missed half of, like, the extra content in Red Dead Redemption regardless. But if you play the missions only in Red Dead Redemption but do most of the side stuff in Mass Effect, Mass Effect's longer.
Those right. Games. And I will have beaten all three Mass Effect games in under a month. If I had played those at the Red Dead pace, it would take me, like, a decade to beat this trilogy, right?
Yeah, and then I was thinking about with, like, Persona 4, because my Persona 4 playthrough came out at, like, 98 hours or odd hours. It's like, you would be dead before you finished playing Persona 4. You'd just be, like, you'd be, like, on the verge of going into the last dungeon, and then you'd keel over. Like, at your funeral, I'd finish the game for you.
Would that,
like,
be the
deal? I'd finish a game for you, like, bury your PS Vita with you.
Okay,
the Nevermore song at the end of Persona 4, like, as you, like, your casket's going down.
I am legally willing this as my funeral plans. If I die first, Sean,
if you die before you finish Persona 4, I now legally am obligated to finish your Persona 4 game before your funeral bury you with your PS Vita.
Can you find a way to, like, have a screen there at the funeral and hook up the game so that, like, everyone can see?
I'll figure that out.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Sean.
Here's the last boss fight, everyone. It's like, what do you think I should do this turn? I'll start polling the audience.
Sean, you're a really good friend.
Yeah, that's the best way to be buried, I think. It's Persona 4.